And when I started running, I suppose I didn't stop. And when I got the chance to go, I said I'd stay going. So it opened up.
We're only the small little fish out there, so we are. And we're trying hard to make it through. But it's hard to get the breaks when you're the smaller fish.
Because I love this county so much, you know. And it's just, I'm delighted that the lads did it for the people of Waterford today, because, like, I'm heartbroken.
Well, we have an All-Ireland final to preview, lads, which is very, very important. But there's only one place to start, and that's with you, Cheddar. You're a dark horse anyways. I had to hear this news. I heard this news 2 weeks ago off Brian Carroll, and I told him I don't believe you.
I don't know how you'd have heard it 2 weeks ago, because I didn't know it myself at that stage. But anyway, either here or there. Look, it's something, Woolly, that obviously came up, and I had, I suppose, plans to go in a different place, and clearly, you know, the opportunity came up, or the issue came up. And I was approached to go for it. And anyway, look, there's, you know, how these things happen. I was only ratified actually, what is it, a night or two ago there, you know. So anyway, looking forward to the job. Clearly, I was there before. You know the team well. A lot of work ahead of us. Firstly, I'd say a big thanks to Eddie and to Niall and to Tommy for the work that they've done. I was always a Leash supporter and following the team. So, you know, to put the team in a good place, and, you know, it's up to us now to build on that and I suppose, you know, seek out other improvements. We just need to really, I suppose, maximize the talent that's in the county and just improve in every aspect that we can and get it to perform to the best that we can. Look, it was like last year, National Hurling League is coming down the track very, very quickly here. If you take Westmeath's group last year, a very, very, very tough division to be in. So we need to be ready to hit the ground running there. So you know, we need to get going quickly and be ready for this.
Yeah, exactly. And, like, I mean, a little birdie tells me that you were the player's choice, which must have been a nice thing to hear.
Well, I wouldn't comment on any of those things, Woolly. Look, we have a job to do, and it's not just necessarily management, it's everybody. It's Leash County Board, it's Leash team, it's Leash supporters, and it's management all together, driving as hard as we can. You know, certainly that's what I'll be doing, just pulling all of the strands together, and then trying to maximise performances every single day.
Yeah, exactly. It's obviously a brilliant appointment for Leash, Cheddar. I'm delighted for you personally. Obviously, the bad news for us here on the show is that you're not going to combine the two. I never thought that you would, if I'm being honest, Cheddar. So this is your last show for now. We never know what happens in the future. The door is always open for my most popular pundit. That's all I'm saying.
Look, it's been brilliant. You know, I'm amazed by the reach of the show, Woolly, to be honest with you, and that's probably a credit to yourself. And, you know, I really, really enjoyed meeting people along the way, and somebody bringing up a point that was discussed the previous week. It was only then that the power, I suppose, of radio and all of that came home to me. But certainly some of the discussions that I would have had with people at matches, you know, based maybe on something that was said on the show or something like that, I was surprised and really, really... it was really, really good, and, you know, met a lot of people along the way. So very thankful to be on the show, you know, certainly to be open again in the future, Woolly. But I just don't think I'd be honest and real on the show and be able to comment properly on things while I'm involved myself. And I don't think it would be fair on other managers and other teams, and it's certainly not fair on our own team and that as well. So look, that would be just my take on it. Other people might have a different view on it, but that's where I would be. So thanks to yourself and thanks to the listeners, you know, for the good crack and the good sport and that, in terms of commenting on games and that. And you know, looking forward to getting down now and getting onto the field.
Yeah, exactly. Brian, you're going to have to take up Cheddar's role now in disagreeing with 90% of the ideas I have.
Well, that's a big boost to fill now, trying to fill Cheddar's boots, let me tell you. Yeah. So, I know, best of luck, Cheddar. Genuinely, any hurling people out there are delighted to see you go back in there with Leash. So, hopefully you drive it on again.
Yeah, fingers crossed. Thanks. Right, lads, we'll move on to the game here, lads. And I want to start off by talking about Liam McCarthy. So the winning captain, Brian, is going to lift the cup, and then they have to hand the cup back. And now, my thoughts on this are that, Jesus Christ, like, is John Kiley or is Liam Cal a 12-year-old school child or the grown adults that couldn't look after that cup for the bus journey home and make sure it you know, treated with the responsibility needed.
Yeah, and I think, in fairness, I think those two cups in particular are probably, they're treated, you know, almost like the Holy Grail. You know, they're not bandied about like other cups can be on occasion, because we often heard the stories where cups are filled. So, you know, you never, ever hear of the Lee McCarthy or the Sam Maguire actually being filled. Well, for starters, Sam Maguire's too big anyway. But, you know, I think there's utmost respect for these cups, and I certainly agree with Jeff in that perspective. I understand the maybe the thought process behind not allowing the cups to be brought back, but it is a pity, you know, that the players don't get an opportunity to maybe pose for pictures in the dressing room or wherever with their family with the actual cup. I know the GAA are saying that, and John Horne said last week on the Late Late Show that the opportunity, please God, will arise next year, that the cup will go down to the counties. But, you know, it's that immediate aftermath, because it is a big part of it. You know, accepting the cup and having that cup to share for those photos does mean a lot to players. You know, if any time I've won a county final, you know, the pictures mean more when you have that cup in front of you. And it adds to the whole experience. So it is a pity, but I suppose you can understand the GAA's maybe call on it, but as you said, maybe a little bit more trust in the actual adults that we're dealing with here.
Well, that's the thing, Cheddar. You understand the homecomings are banned and you can accept that, you know, but like, geez, having the Lee McCarthy in the front of the bus as you drive home, I think that's, for me, it's a little bit too much. I don't know what you think.
No, I agree. Look, clearly there's concern here, and clearly GAA headquarters were a little bit concerned about some of the optics after some of the matches earlier on in the year, and certainly don't want that to happen now, particularly close to Christmas, particularly that we're after coming out of a lockdown. And I can understand that. But I'd say, you know, when you look at Limerick in 2018, they were very, very responsible about what they did with the cup and that, you know. So like, there's precedence there for one of the teams. I'd say Bois will go pure crazy if they're to win at the weekend, and rightly so. But nonetheless, you know, if you trust your county board to run the GAA within your county, well, then trust them to mind something like this. And I do agree with Brian. I do think it's important, and it's a real, you know, this All-Ireland is going to be spoken about for years to come because of the nature of it. I mean, we're still talking about the Thunder and Lightning final. It was 1939 or whenever it was. We're going to be talking about the COVID All-Ireland final for years to come here. And it is a big thing. And I just think that the GAA, I think, should have, you know, give the warnings about it, trust their county board people to look after this and do the right thing. And there's precedence there with Limerick. And I'm not saying that there wouldn't be with Waterford. I'm sure there would. But in terms of actually looking after something like this and understanding the responsibilities that you have and understanding the responsibilities you have to Limerick supporters and, you know, wider public at large here, I think they'd fully understand it, and I think they would respect that. And I think it should have been, there should have been an alternative anyway, I think.
Yeah, I think bringing the cup home is a big thing, which they won't be allowed to do. Come here, actually, what happened? Excuse my ignorance now on the hurling show. What happened in the Thunder and Lightning final?
Look, it was a dreadful day. I obviously wasn't around to see it, Wooly. It was 1939 or something like that. I actually had a person or a family that I know, their dad was involved in it, so it does resonate with me. But clearly, you know, there's special circumstances as such that you remember the occasion maybe by the environment around it, and clearly the whole COVID virus, you know, has wrapped up this championship, really. And people will talk about that. And I think the fact that it's not anything that, you know, it's neither of the teams of the big three that's in it. And it's, you know, it definitely has the, you know, I think the public, the hurling public at large, but even the wider public at large, the sort of neutral supporter is very interested in this game. And it will be a very, very important game. And look, really for Waterford, Waterford haven't won for whatever it is, 60 years. Limerick have had, you know, for a mad hurling county with, you know, huge impetus behind it, hasn't won a whole lot.
in terms of All Ireland. And I, when I say that, I'm very conscious of, you know, the county I'm from in saying that. I was at the 73 final, and you know, they've won one since. And that'd be mad key into win another one. And this team, I think, and I actually like where John has positioned this team psychologically for the game on Sunday, because they appear very hungry and determined for more. You know, so this is their huge All-Ireland for Limerick. Win it, and they could dominate hurling for the next 4 or 5 years. If Waterford win it, they've broken the glass ceiling to winning All-Ireland, and they could be dominant for a number of years. It is hugely important.
Yeah, no, it definitely is. And it is a unique year, Brian, like Cheddar mentioned. And you would look at it in a normal year and say John Kiely has the upper hand. He's been in an All-Ireland final. He's won it. Liam Cahill hasn't done it at senior level. And then I was reading some comments from Liam Cahill. He's obviously won 221 All-Irelands. He's won a minor All-Ireland. He's lost one minor All-Ireland. The minor All-Ireland he won in 16 to beat Limerick in it, you know, which probably would have been a good Limerick team based on their under his success. He says All-Ireland finals are finals, whether they're minor, under 21 or senior. The same butterflies are in players' bellies and your own as a manager or as a coach. And I suppose when you take the crowd out of it that wouldn't be there for underage, the county going absolutely crazy that wouldn't really be there as much at underage, like Liam Cahill is as experienced for a final like this probably as John Kiely is.
I'd fully agree with your statement there, yeah, be honest. And, you know, he's 100% correct. And he's as well saying that there is no difference in All-Ireland final at any level. It's a huge, huge occasion. And you're still managing a group of players and, you know, minors, under 20s, under 21s, they're young men. And we all know that the age profile of senior teams has come down a lot as well. So, you know, he's very experienced. He's a brilliant career to date. But what I love most about his approach at Waterford is he has blown out of the water all the inhibitions that Waterford have had over the last number of years. They've forgotten about tradition. You know, that's no longer a burden on them. So, but their lack of success as a county, a relative success, obviously, in All Ireland, and coming up against bigger, more powerhouse teams like Cork and Kilkenny. Remember, they're the two teams they've beaten this year. So I love the fact that that's not an issue to him, and because it's not an issue to him, it's not an issue to his players anymore. And you know, the same thing in terms of, I know they don't have the crowds to deal with and not as huge a build up as normal, but as a group of players, and from listening to Liam Cahill, the way he speaks, that the players aren't going to be inhibited by the fact that Waterford haven't won since 1959. So I love all those things. You know, he's very positive from that, and you know, that's liberating when you're a player. I love the fact that he is the manager, the main leader of the team, drives those things and doesn't allow those things to inhibit his players, because they do, and they have happened to not just Waterford but to many other teams as well. So I think there's power in that. I think there's real power in that approach, and I think because of that, they're a very, very dangerous team to be playing against this weekend.
No, they definitely are. One other point here, Cheddar, is, and this has been sent to me by 3 or 4 different people this morning already, and it's a program from, I think it's an under 21 team back in 1997, the late 90s anyways. And if you look at the players, it's all players in around my age: Philip Maher, Eamon Corcoran, John Carroll, Liam Cahill's at centre forward on it, Eugene O'Neill is at full forward. So you know all these names in this era. I think Liam Cahill is probably a year older than me. In goals is Fergal Horgan. Now, Cheddar, Fergal Horgan got the semi-final, and I don't know if does it work the same in hurling as football, but usually in football, if you get the semi-final, you kind of know, oh shit, and it's the referee that hasn't got either semi-final is in line for the final. Is it unusual that an ex-teammate of Liam Cahill's will get the semi-final that he's involved in and the final that he's involved in?
I don't know whether it's unusual, Willie, but you know, bear in mind, generally speaking, there's not a huge amount of successful outside managers, you know, so it just may not have happened and the opportunity may not have been there. I've commented on this a number of times before. I have no doubt that Fergal Horgan will do the best he can here and, you know, not show bias to either side, but it's not ideal. And sometimes, you know, reality versus perception, you know, it places huge pressure, I think, on Fergal. I think it's lucky that there's no crowds here. because I think that would, you know, if crowds start to bay against you, I don't care how mentally strong you are, and there's 80,000, you know, screaming down your neck, you know, it may influence you. Incidentally, Fergal is from, as you know, now this is not the case anymore, but certainly in their playing days, Tipperary is divided into four quarters. There's the Mid Championship, the North Championship, the South Championship, and the West Championship. And Fergal is, I'm pretty sure, is an Aquavilla Donaghy Kickham's club member, whereas Liam is in the West, and Liam would have played in the South with Ballingarry, and you know, even Mikey Beavins would have been played in the North with Toome. So you know, a number of years ago, you wouldn't have crossed over that much in Tip. I know you would, but not a huge amount. So I think there's a couple of things like that in it. I think there's one other issue about this that I think hasn't been spoken at all. You know, the chairman of the Referees Association is Willie Barrett, the Tipperary man. I think he's from Arfinnan. You know, and just in the sense of fairness and transparency and all of that, I'm not saying for a minute that, you know, in my view, Fergal Horgan is probably the best referee. And I think the pity about it at the minute, Willie, is that they're at the top level of refereeing in hurling is not as strong, I think, as it was maybe 7, 8, 10 years ago. And I think Fergal Horgan is a fantastic referee, love what he does, generally speaking, lets the game flow, has authority on the game and can instill that if he needs to. But I just think purely for fairness. And, you know, bear in mind, last year, James McGrath walked away, sort of quit when the final was given to James Owens. You know, do you need that? It's not ideal. Do you need that sort of thing going on? I'm not so sure if the referees committee or the referees development committee, if they actually select them. I actually think that they do, or there's certainly some input into it. And I think Willie left himself a little bit open to all of those things as well that he didn't need to do, I think. But right. On the crucial point, you know, is Fergal going to favour? You know, I'd be absolutely amazed if that's the case. But to be honest with you, if I was Liam Cahill, I'd be probably more afraid that it is Fergal as refereeing, because you might be just trying to show that there isn't bias, and then just not maybe give the freeze that, you know, the ones that are sort of 50-50 either one way or the other. I'd be more concerned the other way.
That's the exact point, Cheddar. This is not anything against Fergal Horgan, who will do it as well as he can. He could be unfair on Liam Cahill. That's the point, Brian. He could overthink something because of the connection there. And is there a need for a referee with that connection doing it? Like the optics of it, the position they're putting Fergal Horgan in, all those things, Brian.
Yeah, I agree with almost all those points as well. I fully agree he's the best referee out there at the moment. Should it be as simplistic as he's the best referee out there, so he gets the gig?
Yeah.
In a simple world, yes, that's the answer. But as we know, Irish society and the GAA in particular, we have obviously different ways of looking at things. And I agree with Cheddar. The fact that there's not a crowd there actually will really help, you know, Fergal Horgan in terms of his performance on the day, because we're all human and we're all influenced by the crowds when they're there. Maybe not in every single decision, but there are times, obviously, that, you know, maybe you let the game run when you could pull freeze for other times and that. But, like, you know, it's unfortunate this is coming out maybe a couple of days before Dáil Éireann as well. I don't like to see that happen. We don't even know the relationship between Liam Cahill and Fergal Horgan. Maybe they're not even on speaking terms.
But
we don't. That's my point. You know, we don't know this, so it's a little bit unfair just because they're from the same county that isn't necessary.
Well, no, they're ex-teammates.
And I'm not saying you're saying that. I'm saying for the general people out there, they'll imply that. I know this is only a simple example, and it's not Ireland, but like I shared a house with an inter-county referee from Burr for a year, and anytime I've gone out and he's had a match, he's probably been harder on me. You know, So that's why I take up with Cheddar as well at that point. You know, they tried to show that there was no bias whatsoever. So, you know, it's a very unfortunate situation. And that's probably the final point I come in with and agree with Cheddar again, is that this could all have been probably avoided by Willie Barrett by appointing a different referee.
All I'd say is it's a little bit unusual, you know, and it's definitely an interesting one. And geez, if Liam Sheedy's going to give out after the Tipperary-Galway game, like, I mean, John Kiley could have a fair enough gripe on Monday. I don't think that's the road John Kiley would ever go down. And look, hopefully, in fairness, I don't remember any big talking points coming out of the semi-final that he reffed against Kilkenny or mistakes that he made. So maybe we'll just move.
Yeah, I don't like the fact that it's been made an issue this week. You know, There was never an issue made of it before now. And I know that somebody maybe on Twitter or whatever trying to stir this up the week of the All-Ireland, and some people are, that's what maybe gets them off. I don't know. But, you know, it is unfortunate that it's coming out this week, and there was no issue with it for the semi-final. He's very, very capable. He's the best referee out there. I don't think it'll affect him. And it's a pity that it's even been risen, being honest.
Yeah, it's definitely worth mentioning though, lads, right?
No, I agree with Brian on this, but Brian, I think there's a further point, and you might have raised it in a couple of shows earlier, and maybe around that time that Liam Sheehy commented on that. I think the appointment of referees are trying to move away from that it needs to be a Leinster referee or a Connacht referee or something like that. They want to base it purely on the competency of the referee and the fairness of the referee. But I think it would be worthwhile if they come out and said that look, in the past, to avoid any perceptions of bias or anything like that, we always went for this. We're now looking at a different policy here. We are just going to pick the referee that we think is best for this job. Now, whether he's from the neighbouring county or wherever, it makes no difference. We trust that he is going to be independent in all of his decisions here, and he's going to do the best he can for the All-Ireland. I think it would be worthwhile if that's the policy. Then everybody understands that, and then, you know, there's no problem with something like this then.
Yeah, no, that's fair enough. Come here. I want to talk about the water break, lads. And it's been well documented that Limerick are very good in the fourth quarter. And look, is that anything to do with the water break, or do the best teams just, you know, finish out the game as well? It's hard to know. Stephen Frampton was doing some media at the Waterford Media Day, and he says the obvious result of it is when the team going in and has momentum hates to see the water break coming, and the other team are delighted to get the break and regather. We, among every other team, I'm sure, are trying to figure out how do we continue that momentum into the fourth quarter. And here's a theory I had on this, Cheddar, and, you know, it's like, this would be like something Gerald Lucknan would have done back in the late 90s. So say Waterford have a good third quarter. Instead of going for the water break, why would they not stay out on the field, hold their positions, like a boxer not sitting down in between rounds, psychologically telling the other fella, look, I'm not even tired, I don't need to sit down. Would there be something to do in something like that around the water break? Other fellas have suggested stay marking your man even when they walk over to stay marking the Limerick lad even when they head over to get the water. Again, this reminds me a lot of kind of Gerald Lucknan type psychological warfare.
Look, it's up to the other team to make use of it as well, Wooly. But the level of detail, the level of pre-planning before the game is such that, you know, teams will know this and they will use it. And you'll be actually, it may be you or Bray to start with a different game plan or a slight tweak or your game plan or something like that. You get the team around you for 1 minute and you explain that. Incidentally, I saw a couple of teams in Kilkenny this year that when the break came, they just huddled in the middle of the field.
Right.
Now they had the puck out after that. So now you were putting pressure on the opposition. The minute the referee blew the whistle, they were back in position straight away, and your team was jogging out onto the field. So there was a little bit of tactical stuff going on that I have seen. Incidentally, the one about staying marking your man, that would be a really interesting one. So it would, and I'm not so sure if there's a law against it.
I wouldn't say it is. Yeah.
Yeah. No. That's a really interesting one. No. Look, I think I actually. Favourite. To be honest with you, I've said this a number of times on the show before, all managers do this anyway. It's just that it is not a formal break. And provided that it's just for the minute, that it doesn't ramble on to 2 minutes, and then everybody gets restless and supporters get restless and fellas are sort of dragging, walking out onto the field and that type of thing. Incidentally, I mean, the first thing here is player safety, about getting liquids on board and all of those things. That's the first thing. So there's no argument about this while we still have COVID. But I think the GAA probably should look at this again, you know, please God that this goes away and we get this thing sorted and all of that, and we don't need to do it because of the virus. I think the GAA should look at this. I actually think it's a good thing. I know as a management team you'd like to look at it. If you lose momentum, sure, you've had a chance yourself to get into the huddle here and actually reinstill momentum if that's what you want to do. So you need to plan and manage all of those things. I think if a team is in the ascendancy in the third quarter and that ascendancy is turned upside down in the fourth quarter, well, you know, why didn't you do something about it when you had an opportunity to do it, would be my view. You know, maybe you might be able to do it, but maybe it's the level of fitness that the other team has over you and that's coming to the fore, because, you know, the last 15 minutes are crucial. Generally speaking, they're fittest, quick, well-organized teams. It's when you start to tire and pressure comes on and you want to get rid of the ball rather than working the ball through the hands and all of that, that's when you see the mistakes happen. And then it could very well be something to do with fitness or something like that. Now, that won't be the case on Sunday because we have two extremely fit and very quick teams.
Oh yeah, there's no doubt about that. What do you think, Brian? Do you think staying out in your position? I didn't even think of it from a tactical point of view, Brian, that if you're out in your positions and say if it is your puck out, you know, moving from that puck out just as Limerick are walking back out into the field to try and find you and where, you know what I mean? Where are you? I think there's an advantage to potentially staying out there. Obviously, if there's one or two of your players dying with the thirst, by all means, run to the sideline quickly, get it and get back out there.
Yeah, look, it's like everything. If it worked, it was the best thing ever. Yeah. You know, yeah. And if it didn't work, you were in Egypt. You know, what were you doing? So, it swings and roundabouts. I would probably disagree with Cheddar in that I would hate to see it come into the game on a permanent basis, in that I know you're almost implying that there should be a timeout from a manager's perspective. So I think that's your manager cap probably on there. But probably from a supporter's perspective, I hate it. So I'd like to obviously see it got rid of. I understand its need at the moment. We've discussed that already in a previous show. But yeah, look, it's like we've seen a couple of, not like, you know, not gamesmanship, but we've seen probably a couple of times, especially when you're at the game, I've probably seen them more as commentator, where players have been slow to maybe amble onto the field. So they pretend they're getting a drink of water, they pretend they're going to the physio, and they're trying to find themselves in a load of space, and where when the keeper has the ball from the book out, right, particularly when it's obviously their book out, that they're suddenly popping up somewhere that they shouldn't have been and unmarked. So that's been very interesting to see. You know, I've seen Mark Coleman do it for Cork, and Bonner Marr tried it for Tipperary against Galway. So but both times, in fairness to the opposition, they picked them up and they got there just in time. So it is interesting that kind of aspect has crept in, but no one has actually got it through because of quick thinking on the opposition. So, you know, teams are aware of it. So look, it's interesting. I'll go back to my original point. No matter what you try, if it works, it's brilliant. And it's working for Limerick and Mormon because they're getting a chance to reset and they drive it home after that. But maybe it's a simple case of maybe they were going to drive it home anyway. So, you know, you just don't know. I think, you know, we'll get into analysis in a minute. I think Waterford probably have learned a huge amount from that Limerick game earlier in the year in that Munster final. I think we'll see a different Waterford probably the weekend.
Yeah, I never thought of that one, Brian. So obviously I was thinking of the advantage of the team staying out there. But if it's the other team's puck out that's taken the water break, yeah, they can just slink onto the field in different areas and actually, you know, maybe be in a position to take a puck out as well. It is a weird one where it stops when it does stop on puck outs. I think we talked about that before. Another quick one before we get into the analysis, Cheddar. I think we'll all agree on this, is that the Antrim and Kerry hurlers, they're not allowed to stay in Croke Park after the Joe McDonagh Cup final to watch the All-Ireland final. Like, I mean, would one team in the upper deck of the Cusack stand and the other in the upper deck of the Hogan stand? For me, this is kind of our computer says no, our bullshit that I hate. I hate the lack of common sense and to say, look, on this occasion, that's not going to do any harm. This is not a GAA decision, it has to be pointed out. This is a government decision. Alan Milton from the GAA said there has been no movement from the government in relation to families or spectators or indeed additional backroom team members attending. Because I know there's a lot of Limerick players, and I see some of the Mayo players now as well asking for families to be there, which I think is a no-brainer as well, Cheddar. This is a government issue, not allowing it, and kind of, you know, deciding that common sense is not going to be allowed.
I think once it is, Willie, that then the show is over on it, because the GAA is going to be dependent on the government, you know, in terms of even financial support, maybe to run the 2021 championship and that as well. And they certainly don't want to be the sporting organisation that kicks against. You know, bear in mind, it's probably NFET that's given that advice ultimately. So you're going against medical advice here. But practically, I don't know, Brian, but there's surely 30 or 40 private boxes all around Croke Park that are not going to be used on Sunday. Yeah. If you wanted to put one player in every box and be seen to be so clear-cut about this, you could actually do it. And to be honest with you, I think it would be nice if each of the players' families was allocated the box. I'm sure there's enough of them there. There must be about 20 or 30 of them on one side and on the other side. That, you know, there could have been... It certainly could have been worked through in a practical way and in a very safe way, and, you know, have enough sufficient medical people there to make sure that there was no messing about here. But look, once there's a government edict or issue on that that's driven by the medical people, you have no choice. And rightly so, I think, because I think if GAA went out on a solo run on this, then they're wide open then to, you know, an awful lot of pressure from a whole lot of people. You know, we're lucky to get the championships
going here. I think there's an awful lot of other things going on in society that's messing up, you know, what the government and what the medical people want to do to try and kill this virus. I don't think we should contribute to that. I fully understand, being, you know, you have an Anthem player coming down to Croke Park, you have a Kerry player coming up to play in a Joe McDonough final. It's just absolutely brilliant to hear about it. But I just think that the circumstances are so risky. If it's going against government advice and government issued advice, I think it would be just too risky to do that.
Ironically, Brian, they could go up to the hospitality sector, Kerry and Antrim, and sit down and have a socially distanced dinner, and they could look out the window, but they couldn't socially distance sitting outside in the stand. You know, it doesn't fully add up. This is what frustrates me. I hate when common sense, you're being told to do something that makes no sense to you, and if you were to ask somebody why that is, they probably wouldn't even be able to give you the answer. That's just the way it is.
Yeah, I agree with you on this one. It's like common sense is not common in this particular case. It is an absolute travesty, I think, to those Antrim and Kerry hurlers that they finally got Joe McDonagh final on the same day as the All-Ireland final. These players are finally getting their day in the sun. Obviously, it's a pity that there's no crowds there, and it is the only reason it's on this day and not the minor final is because of COVID. I understand all those situations, but the final, when it was there, that they should have been allowed that. I've actually just Googled, there's 8-7 Harper boxes in Croke Park, so we obviously have more than enough capacity to put maybe the families of each of the players in those Harper boxes, and then obviously you know, the two teams can sit, you know, the stadium's enough. We don't need to explain that to common social distance. It's absolutely ridiculous. I mean, it is a pity. Even the point made as well that not even all the traditional backroom team members are allowed to attend now. Because I know that for a fact. Martin Bennett is the speed coach, sprint coach for Waterford at the moment, and he's not allowed to attend because he's not one of the, you know, maybe the players that's involved in the warm up or whatever. So it is a pity. He's been working with them all year, and won't be able to attend the All-Ireland final on Sunday. So that's you know, that to me isn't good enough. And, you know, I think the Desi Farrell and James Horn, you know, pointed that out at the weekend as well. It was probably more an opportunity to talk about it. But the, you know, the amount of backroom staff that's involved at training sessions, and yet the team not it's not appropriate that they go to the matches. So it is a pity, and I agree with you. It's one of those situations that you're just left scratching your head. You cannot understand the logic behind stopping them. It is the ultimate case of the computer says no.
Yeah. Did you say sprint coach?
Yeah.
Don't get me started on sprint coaches. They make you run in the most unnatural way. Like, I mean, I could do a full show given out about sprint coaches and fellas trying to make you, oh, don't talk to me. Anyways, I was fast enough. I didn't need someone trying to make me tear up the script.
You didn't do it properly. Trust me.
But you need to be practicing this every night.
You heard me raving about Martin Bennett before. I'm giving him a plug here. You heard me raving about him before when he was involved with Derry. And if he could teach me how to run properly at 35, he could teach anyone how to run properly. So simple.
Maybe you have to be.
The problem is there's a lot of spoofers out there, and they make it sound so complicated and highfalutin how you run properly. And when you get taught how to do it properly, it's so simple.
Right. Okay. We'll leave it there. So we'll start talking about the match next.
You can't touch this. This.
A few weeks later, they played Kilkenny below Nolan Park, the same year, and they were being hockey. But the camera went in, there was a fella warming up. Well, Jesus, you should see him. Yeah, the fuck, he was massive. Legs, arse, built, but I bust out laughing watching him. There he was, the epitome of what I said.
I told you, homeboy, you can't touch this. Yeah, that's how we living, and you know, you can't touch this.
All right, so Les, Waterford Limerick first. We'll do a little bit on Kerry Antrim. I want to start off with Liam Cahill, something he said. He says, we've played them already now, and we'd like to think that we've improved since then. I know Limerick would say the same, but we would like to think that we're gathering momentum week on week, and we look forward to going into the match ready to perform. Is there an argument, Cheddar, to be made that Waterford have improved more since the Munster final than Limerick have?
I think there probably is, yes. But on the flip side of that, I'd say that just Limerick just hasn't hit form yet either. And yet they've been winning matches reasonably comfortably. So there's I suppose some flip sides to that. I think there's a couple of really key issues though, and I just want to comment on those later on. But I think Look, Waterford, there's a couple of good things that have happened to Waterford. They've had a settled team. I think, you know, they've had very little changes in their team. I think maybe even Kenny coming in for Shane Fyles, which was an injury change, is probably the only change, or there's the only real change, I think, in their team. But they've had an opportunity in a very constant period to have a settled team to improve incrementally game on game. And they certainly have. And, you know, they finished the last half against Kilkenny with a fantastic performance. We'll comment on that later on. So I think he has. And I probably think that the Limerick, well, I'm a little bit surprised about that, the next point I'm going to make, because the Limerick game plan is well known. So if Liam wasn't prepared for that on Munster final day, and he thinks he's going to be more prepared now, you'd probably ask, well, why wasn't he prepared on the Munster final day? But nonetheless, I think they've got confidence in their game momentum. And sometimes when you're top of the ground like that, things flow for you and things happen for you. You're in form, the team's in form of that, and things can happen for you. I think it might be a little bit more to do with that than maybe the approach they had against Limerick on that day. But they definitely learned some things against Limerick. There's no doubt about that. And I think Brian might allude to those later.
Yeah, like, I mean, Declan Hannan has been talking, Brian, during the week, and he puts it down to, he says, but then that's down to the massive intensity and work rate that Waterford brought to the Munster final. John Kiley said after the Munster final, we were probably just under an awful lot more pressure. When you're put under pressure like that, you're going to make mistakes. Tom Morrissey have been talking this week about the pressure Waterford put Limerick under. Like, I mean, it's all coming back to this same thing. Limerick's game plan, you know, the short game, the moving it through the lines, that breaks down when they're put under serious pressure. And I know that sounds easy, go out and work hard and everything, but, you know, it's not as easy as it sounds.
No, it's obviously not as easy as it sounds. And obviously you need a huge fitness level. But what I love about Liam Cahill's statement there is how honest he is. Again, there's no beating around the bush. He says it exactly as he calls it. Like, you know, he believes they've learned a lot from that game and they're better placed to rattle this or Limerick team. So he's making this, you know, that's the key message driving home to these players, apart from the fact that they clearly are a better team. He's making this, it's no longer Everest to beat this Limerick team. He's breaking them down that they're human. You know, when they did get among them and they made it difficult for them, you know, they troubled Limerick. You know, Limerick put up their smallest score of the year that year. They only scored 25 points in the Munster final. They're blowing all the other teams out of the water by scoring 30 points plus. So they've probably got to see that this Limerick team, actually, they're men. They bleed the same as any other men, and that it is actually achievable to beat this team. So I think that's, again, there's power in that, and these players believe that, and probably they looked like almost rabbits caught in headlights in that first half against Kilkenny, and they threw off the shackles in that second half, and they just went for it. And, you know, to score 2-16 and play in that second half against Kilkenny, and this is what I talked about earlier, you know, throwing off those inhibitions of tradition and not playing in All-Ireland finals and losing to Kilkenny regularly, they just got rid of all that. And I think that's what Liam Cahill has probably been instilling these players mentally over the last couple of weeks, and probably did in the immediate aftermath of that Munster final as well. You know, because Waterford, they were pretty good in the Munster final, but I wouldn't say they were even happy with their performance there. So I think all that psychology and mindset is not to be underestimated.
Yeah, one big thing that Waterford will have learned from the Munster final is their puckouts malfunctioned, I suppose. Waterford had 47% of their own puckouts in the Munster final. And Cheddar, I suppose they destroyed Kilkenny on their puckouts, especially in that second half. And to be fair, they destroyed them in the first half too. You had Stephen Bennett and Fagan, you know, breaking out to the wings, completely free, catching balls. And then you see a camera angle from behind the goal, and they're doing that kind of old school bunch in the middle and then break to the wings. And Kilkenny tactically were very naive on this one in that they man-marked them. And we know from years ago, even in hurling, we know it in Gaelic football a long time, even back with Anthony Nash with Cork, and you had the Tipperary lads man-marking them, and they were being dragged to right and left. And if you man-mark the forwards, you allow them to make space for each other. It's often the fella who runs isn't the fella getting the ball, is a decoy, and someone else gets it anyways. Limerick won't do that. So Limerick won't follow the Waterford forwards. They'll all stand in their traditional six positions. And if you want to create space on the wing, Dermot Burns is going to be standing on one wing and Kyle Hayes is going to be standing on the other wing. So Waterford won't get anywhere near the amount of joy after puck out. And is it not fair to say that the puck out was the whole basis for their domination of Kilkenny in the second half?
Well, the last point is important, and it's very, very surprising that Kilkenny were outdone in air game. But that brings us to another point of Waterford. Waterford have a strong air game, and you will need that against Limerick. I think, look, first of all, the puck out are hugely important now, and retaining possession on your puck out, and not just necessarily retaining possession. Retaining possession in the critical areas where your next move is in score creation territory is really, really important. And I thought, you know, Waterford, you know, Steve McKeith's a very, very experienced keeper, and his experience with his backs and that, and understands the moves and runs. And Limerick have been doing this for a while. And I think that's one of the things that will break down either side. Who has done the best analysis of the puck out strategies of each team? Because even if you're now going back to, you know, just drive it long, well, there's two fair half back lines here, all 6 foot three, 4 5. You know, putting it up in the air there, you know, might be the most clever thing to do. So I think that's one of the things that I've started to mark, that the puck out strategies for both teams and who wins them and whose puck out is, you know, is getting to better score creation territory than the other, I think might determine, you know, which team, you know, grabs momentum of the game here. And Limerick's, you know, there's a lot of, you know, Limerick is pretty well clear to people now what they do, you know, whether they want to, whether they're trying to create the space or pull out the half hour and to put it over the top, or whatever. You know, teams know it. You know, so have you rehearsed this, how you're going to defend that, win back the possession, do the turnover? Bear in mind, one huge factor about Waterford is their level of turnover. A lot of the statisticians would tell you that that's one of the key statistics about performance results. Their turnovers against Kilkenny was massive. Now, you know, whether Kilkenny lent themselves to that by sort of being in the wrong place, wrong time sort of thing, or that, I don't know. But Waterford did it, particularly in the second half. And it's, you know, you're just going, I want to stay on the puck out, but it's related to this. You know, we talk about Waterford's physicality, but they actually go at you as well. So when they go at you, they're dragging you out of your shape. But you know, their aggression in that middle third and the committing of bodies to that middle third and winning the ball, it might be the antidote that puts Limerick under a bit of pressure. You know, in terms of Limerick are very, very dependent on winning that first ball. And the next time you'll see it is probably a pop hand pass 10, 15 metres to a man on the burst. And now they've opened up the place in front of them. They've gone down the channels and now they're ready to do with their play what they want to do. If you break down that at source, and, you know, so I'd be very interested in looking at that on Sunday. And Waterford have, you know, this is what they have done so far. And maybe that's what Liam is alluding to. If we can raise the intensity levels and the aggression levels, the physicality levels in that bear pit in the middle third, and we win more possession, we stop Limerick getting possession, and we keep the foot flat to the mat when we do that, you know, are they the learnings that are going to take away from that Munster final?
Yeah, maybe it will. But just keep it on that Waterford puck out, Brian. Where should Stephen O'Keefe be putting that, right? Because if the point is that Limerick won't man mark, so creating that space will be gone, you know, the half-back line, surely with those three big, huge men, might be out of the question. And then we know Limerick's full forward line drops a half a line and they'll want you to go to the full-back line and then they'll run down and mark. They'll stand off the half-back line. The kind of Hegarty, Morrissey and Keane Lynch will drop a bit off the half-back line, almost teasing you to go to the half-back line, which Ina Murphy went to sometimes. And if the half-back line get it, both the Limerick full forward line will turn out the field towards them and the half forward line will turn towards them, almost get you in a sandwich. So that they kind of zonally have that whole middle area covered. Their half back line are monstrous. And if you go short to your full forward line, they'll run down and pressurise that. There's very few options for a goalkeeper when they look out against them.
Yeah, well, obviously, I think diversity of puck outs is hugely important there. So obviously they need movement from their midfield, from their half forward line, even the half. I think all the players need to be presenting themselves, and obviously Steve McKeith is very experienced and he knows what he needs to hit. But there's also an element of it's an All-Ireland final, and sometimes you just need to hammer the hammer. We're talking about these Limerick players, and this is what I'm getting back to in the mindset. I've been guilty of this myself. We build up this Limerick team as if they're actually phenomenal, like that they cannot be beaten at all, and we can see that, you know, at times they are human. So I think Liam Cahill is very much a believer in that. And I think that's exactly what he did with that Watford team in the second half. I don't think that they suddenly had a massive puck-out strategy. I know this might sound mad at times, but he literally, Jack Fagan just went up and started catching ball. Like, it wasn't from a massive run or a pre-planned puck-out. He just went up and won balls that he'd no right to win. And players like that against big players.
I would say, just sorry on that, Brian, you know, say Austin Gleeson's point then at the start of the second half, that was definitely from half the pitch being left wide open, which wouldn't happen against Limerick.
That's my point, my original point, is you need diversity. So you can't stay pucking every single ball down top of them. You're not going to win every single ball. So I think you just need, I don't think they should be afraid though to not put any ball straight down the throat of that Limerick half back line either, because in big games, you need big players to stand up and win ball. They've no right to win or half one up to now. And I think that's my point. Jack Fagan did that in the second half against Kilkenny. He went up and he won ball, he no right to. So that's not to be underestimated. So sometimes we're trying to find so many different ways around it, and you're getting away from, it's a very, very battle orientated game is hurling. You know, you win your own battle, and the more of them you win, obviously the better you're going to be as a team. Like, you know, I keep repeatedly saying this, and you know, I don't think Watford will be afraid to front up to that at the weekend. They're not going to hit every puck out long. That'd be madness. But they won't be afraid to go after it at times either.
Right. What do you think, Cheddar? Can the likes of Austin Gleeson, Stephen Bennett, Jack Fagan and these fellas compete if they do go long? Because, I suppose they sent a few long in the fourth quarter in that Munster final, and that was the downfall of them because that Limerick half-back line came into it then.
Well, look, you run the risk of giving the possession away. But, you know, Brian raises a good point. If you have, you'll only have five or six options and you're leaving it up to the goalkeeper to make the best decisions on those. But the level of space you would have in Croke Park and the accuracy of players now to be able to ping the pass to hand on the move, it's quite difficult to either zonal mark or hedge between players or man mark or whatever. It's quite difficult just to close down everything. And Brian's absolutely right. You will not go with just one or two things. You'll need to have a range of things that you're going to be able to pull in. And whichever team is fully wired up to all of those, you know, in terms of the movement, the counter movement that's going on to create the space and all of those things, whichever team can figure out the opposition on that and neuter it, then you have a great chance of turning over ball. And it's a huge fillip to a team if you can turn over their puck outs, particularly if they are tactically pucking out. If you can turn that over and put it back over the bar, to be honest with you, it's worth more than the 1 point that you can get. So it's certainly going to be an area that's going to be very, very interesting. And you've got two good goalkeepers as well, you know, so it's going to be really, really interesting.
The Limerick shape, Brian, I was just thinking, has it evolved a little bit in the full forward line? Because I always remember when they won the All-Ireland, they had Galan kind of on the edge of the square, and then they might have had Flanagan and Mulcahy playing out in front of him. Do you know? So, like, I mean, and there was a lot of diagonal balls being put in. And then against Galway, because I was at the game, Mulcahy kind of went right out to the 45, and Seamus Flanagan and Galan stayed on the edge of the small square beside each other. So that was a clear kind of, you know, difference in that shape of the front three. I'm not sure why exactly they would want to change it too much. But, you know, we probably don't see the same amount of diagonal ball going into the full forward line. And maybe that's just because the half forward line, like Hegarty, used to give a lot of them in. He's shooting a lot more now.
Yeah, well, look, I think it's been quite well documented at this stage that they like to play one play out. But the way they've gone over the last year or two is one player out and two inside. And whoever that is, there's an element of rotation in that as well. You often see them set up with the three across the line with their puck outs, the opposition puck out. But if it goes long, Graham Mulcahy takes off on his bike on more occasions than not, gets out into that middle third. And we've seen him through that to great effect actually in that Munster final, particularly in that last quarter. He came out and he started to hurl a lot of ball as a withdrawn corner forward out around the half forward line. So I think, again, it's the dearth of options that Limerick have is what makes them so dangerous. We still don't know, obviously the team hasn't been named yet, we still don't know, will Seamus Flanagan play or will it be Peter Casey? Will it be Graham Mulcahy dropped? I don't think he probably will be. They're probably, you know, because he didn't get a puck for the last day off Sean Loftus. Peter Casey came on and did the job. But again, that's, we talked about this before, that's what makes Limerick so strong is the depth of their panel. So, you know, we're left wondering who's starting. You know, we obviously, Aaron Galan is supposed to have been in hospital for a night or two, and he was called 50-50 a week ago, so you'd expect that he'll be okay. Obviously, we'd all hope he'd be okay to play in the All-Ireland. So, you know, Limerick, they keep you wondering. Now, if you look at their half forward line, we do know Tom Morrissey and Garrod Hegarty will be two half forwards in the Munster final. Waterford actually went man to man, and Kevin Moran followed Tom Morrissey everywhere he went, and he did very well in them. He kept Tom Morrissey scoreless in that Munster final, and did an excellent job in him. Callum Lyons went man to man on Garrod Hegarty, followed him everywhere, and did really well. Probably up to that last water break, Garrod Hegarty started to hurl a lot more ball in the fourth quarter, we'll call it. So it's interesting, and you know, and we've said this too. We don't know who their centre forward is going to be. Will the pick Keane Lynch to hurl, you know, off tight to Burka and try and get involved in a lot of play in that middle and dictate things from there? You know, he's a great link man. He's able to take scores as well. Or will they look at an option of maybe trying to nullify, you know, Tadhg De Burka in terms of actually putting a player standing on top of him? So it's very, very interesting. That's what makes Limerick so dangerous. They're very hard to call and they're not afraid to try things.
No, they're definitely not afraid to try things. And Brian's right, Cheddar. We'll definitely see the two Waterford wing-backs following their men everywhere and Tadhg De Burka sweeping. It is an interesting one Brian brings up and says, say if it is Keane Lynch, who's well able to play anywhere in the forward line, whenever you see Tadhg De Burka dropping, why don't you just drop with him?
Yeah, it depends on your role itself. You know, can you go positive? Can you put Keane Lynch playing outside of the centre back and engage their midfielder so they don't have a defensive midfielder in front of you? And similar to what Thibodeau had done with Noel McGrath, and work the ball through there and keep, you know, keep a lot of space. These are the things that I'd actually love to be at the match and to be up in the stand looking down at it, to be able to see, you know, what's actually going on here? What's giving this team the ability to get their to get their hole in the game here? One thing about Tadhg De Burka this year, he has always done this, but he has done it very effectively this year, is that when he gets the ball, he makes 20, 30 metres there very, very quickly. He's actually in scoring territory himself. So you definitely cannot allow that to happen. You know, he might drop and be that defender on the edge of the D to be able to attack the ball from there. But he's actually added a little bit to his game by the ability to actually go from the half back line to midfield very, very quickly and then be able to ping ball to space inside. So there are all the things I think that we'll have to think about. But there's no doubt about it that Limerick have got to do something with De Burka. If he is such a big influence as he normally is in Waterford, allowing him to be able to dictate that certainly wouldn't make sense to me.
No, definitely. Shane Dowling was talking in the Limerick Leader, Brian, and he was talking what Shane O'Neill did against Limerick is that they played the sweeper in one corner, and JJ's mentioned this on the show before, and I noticed this at the game but didn't see it there enough to be commenting on it. Padraig Mannion kind of played, say if Limerick, Flanagan and Galan were in close together, Padraig Mannion just stayed right out, like almost playing as a corner back, not marking anyone, obviously to cut off any of that space for Flanagan probably to run out into. And then I was wondering, is that a good thing to do, or should a sweeper be stopping more dangerous ball going in front of the two lads?
No, and I've seen Limerick apply that themselves. I've seen them do it against Clare when Davy Fitz was over Clare and he was playing a one-man, type two-man pull forward line, and it was actually Seamus Hickey was the player and he stood in that corner because obviously they're trying to leave, say for instance, they're leaving 15-3 and they're leaving 15-3 to be able to, you know, make the space there. And It's not the key thing to this, and you watch Limerick's movement. Players never run in straight lines to the ball. So if they, for instance, have Aaron Galan and Graham Mulcahy inside, I'm just using those two players, and they're inside, they'll never run out in a straight direction of that ball. It'll always be go one way, jink back. And
yeah,
it's massive, and we probably see that more in football. Obviously, you're used to seeing that, Woolley, but you know, this is probably, I won't call it new territory in hurling, but like, you know, it is an old school mindset, you know, to run in straight lines. So that has certainly changed. And so yeah, if you heard your sweeper stand in front of that, in that space, it really does nullify it and makes it a lot more difficult. But I suppose it comes down to the fact, and Cheddar has already alluded to this, there's a huge amount of space to go back and players are able to put it on a pinpoint at this particular case. So, you know, we also saw Galway did it to great effect in terms of Padraig Mannion nullifying that space for the full forward line, and Limerick didn't have much joy out of their full forward line, but they found other ways. And I think again, I've talked already about how dangerous Limerick are. It's the fact that so many of them can stand up and be match winners on day, and Garrod Hegarty and Tom Morrissey were those two players the last day chipping in with four or five points each. So, you know, it's massive scoring return from their half-hour line
when usually you're looking at the full forward. But look, Galway, a wider point than that, Galway played a sweeper. I think it really did hamper them going forward. They only scored 10 points in play. Limerick, even though people probably walked away from that saying Limerick didn't hurl well, they still scored 20 points in play and could have had a couple of goals as well. So Limerick are able to find ways around no matter what system you put in front of them at the moment. And that's probably why they're people's choices favourites.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. Like, I mean, Waterford only scored 12 points against them from play as well, Cheddar. Like, I mean, it is hard to score against this team.
But, you know, earlier on in the championship, their full backline creaked a little bit. You know, maybe that's just inexperience. There was actually two players in the full backline, not just one, in terms of a change. Well, I think they've steadied down since. And, you know, clearly, I think Tipperary went after that in that particular game. But, you know, generally speaking, you know, Limerick will play with seven defenders. They won't play with a sweeper or something like that. They'll have that ability to be able to link a defensive midfielder with an attacking midfielder and, you know, put you under pressure on both sides of the field. But I just think that they're, you know, they're very, very experienced. They very understand one another very well. Even they've moved Kyle Hayes back as a wing back. That's another interesting thing. You know, will they put Kyle Hayes up centre forward again? They have a lot of options, as Brian says. Yeah. And they have done those options. And there's one other thing about John Kiely. When players come in and play well, he trusts them to play well, and you know he trusts them and he leaves them there. And you know you've got. I can just imagine what the training in Limerick the next night would be like, which is not dissimilar to the sort of the mindset that Kilkenny had for 20 or 30 years under Brian. That you know when you get your chance and you prove your worth, you're left there for the next day. Now that changed a little bit with Seamus Flanagan coming in the last day, but they have to play with a certain method. And I've said a number of times earlier on in the year that I would have thought at this stage, generally speaking, methods have shelf lives for 2 or 3 years. And I would have thought at this stage that other teams would come with that either neuter that method or come with something different that actually, you know, makes it very difficult to play against. And it just hasn't happened yet. And Limerick, I think, have changed their play a little bit. In the All-Ireland in 2018, their game so much centred about the runs that Seamus Flanagan made off the ball. I actually remember the All-Ireland that year, and Paul Kinnerk had his arm around Seamus Flanagan on the opposite sideline to where he was standing. He ran around, he nearly actually walked him to where he wants him to stand, obviously to take the Galway full back out of the play. And I think through that year, Brian is right. Aaron Gillan he certainly wasn't the spearhead that he has been this year, and an awful lot of the ball that would be played to him, yes, it would be played to hand, but it would be played outside him, and it was very, very difficult to defend against. He's a very, very strong player, but I think they've changed that. Aaron Gillan in some of the games this year has been the spearhead focal point for their attack as such, with Dempsey and the other very quick player sort of working off them as such. And they have the ability to change those things around and make it very, very difficult for you. And I think that's one of their strong points.
Yeah, exactly right, lads. You have to give you a prediction in a word, Brian, because I want to get a prediction on the Joe McDonagh Cup. Limerick or Waterford?
My head says Limerick, but the romantic in me says Waterford. And I'm crazy, but there's something brewing there that I just love. And again, maybe it's the romantic in me that I just love to see them do it. So long since they've done it. And I love the way Liam Cahill's going about his business. I can't believe I'm going against Limerick again. I've said all year I think Limerick will win the All-Ireland, but I'm going to be a little bit romantic today, coming up to Christmas and all that.
Yeah, so you're going to go for a Waterford Mayo double there altogether for the All-Ireland.
Yeah, exactly. I don't gamble, so that's why I've never
approached. Cheddar, in a word, quickly.
I can't give you a word on it. Well, you could Waterford have a lot of advantages. The fact that there's no crowd there, there's no build-up and all of that stuff that seems to affect them. I think the other thing that's important here is that it is Limerick they're playing. Because when you look back at 96 with Wexford and Clare and Offaly yourselves, Brian, generally speaking, if you're not playing one of the top three in an All-Ireland, you have a great chance of winning it. Galway were the same a number of years ago. They won't see Limerick as the same threat as in an All-Ireland, although they've beaten some of these teams, but in an All-Ireland is different. I think there's a lot of things here to consider, but there's one huge thing to consider. I think if Waterford start with the same intensity level and keep it up as they had in the second half, and that they're able to, you know, knock Limerick off of their game, they have a great chance. But Limerick have won all their National Hurling League games this year. They're National Hurling champions, they're Munster champions. They're very aware that they've won one All-Ireland and they're very hungry to win another one, I think. I actually don't think they've hit full flow yet. And I think if they do on Sunday and Galan is fit and all of that, I just can't go past Limerick at the minute. But I think it'll be just a pint or two wider away, to be honest with you.
Right, OK. I can't see past Limerick either, lads, to be honest, probably by 6 or 7. All right, Cheddar, Joe McDonagh Cup, Brian had to go there, we heard his bell ring, and Joe McDonagh Cup prediction, Antrim versus Kerry, this is at 1 o'clock, great occasion for them. Big team news here is that Neil McManus is back fit. I think it was in the league final he did his hamstring, missed everything. Now he's back for the final. Darren Gleeson says we'll have to look at this when he comes into training tonight, Saturday, Tuesday, Thursday. He's going to get lots of opportunities to prove he's 100% right. And if someone like Neil is 100% right, it would be hard to leave him off. That's an understatement anyways. The Antrim have beaten Kerry 3 times already this year, all close enough games, except for the last one, which I think maybe Kerry were through already. The league final, there was only 2 in it. Where do you see this one going?
Look, Neil McManus has a huge bearing on this. He would walk onto any team in the country. We've said that before, anybody knows that. But, you know, he'd have to come in fit into it. This is obviously an All-Ireland final, a Joe McDonagh final. It's in Croke Park. I just think that Antrim have improved. So have Kerry. Vincent O'Connor has done a brilliant job in Kerry and keeping them really competitive over a number of years, which is difficult to do, particularly in a football-oriented county. I think they've done a brilliant job there. And clearly there's a great opportunity for them to win the Leinster Championship next year as well. That they're, you know, they know what's ahead of them here. But I just think that Antrim have a little bit too much. And I think if Neil McManus is right, I think that they will, of course, it'll be very close. I think that National League final, incidentally, that National League or the Division 2A final, if my memory serves me correct, was a neutral territory in Tullamore. I think the score was something like 222 or 223 to 220. So there was very little in it, but they're high scores. So look, I just think Antrim by a couple of pints, but I do want to make one other comment on that. I think now that the Joe McDonagh is on before the senior All-Ireland, I think that's the way it should be for future. I think recognising the work that goes on in all of these counties, and you know, we were there ourselves at different times as well, and we were there last year, putting on that before the showpiece senior is the right place for it, rather than a minor All-Ireland with maybe the same teams that's playing in the senior. You know, what are you doing? Promoting the strong counties to be strong. Yeah. I would definitely like some of these county boards to, you know, to start getting on the bandwagon about making sure that this Joe McDonagh is always precedes the senior All-Ireland, regardless of whether it's a COVID year or whether it's not.
Cheddar, just on that there, I'm a bit torn on that, because if that is played before the All-Ireland, the Joe McDonagh winners don't have the opportunity to get back into the Liam McCarthy, and Laois would never have beaten Dublin that day in Amore Park. I don't know, I'm torn on it. I love seeing it before the All-Ireland, but you're losing out on the other, you know, carrot of winning it and then re-entering the race.
Well, look, can you not work it the following year? You know, there's surely some way around this that recognises it and gives you the opportunity then obviously to step up into the next place after that. I think, look at it creatively, and something certainly can be done there. I would be certain, and I know, I mean, I was a supporter in Croke Park last year for the Joe Mack against Westmead, other than yourselves in 2003, you know, the Laois or the Antrim hurlers, Kerry hurlers, you know, don't have a huge amount of opportunities at playing there at that level. And, you know, they're special occasions for everybody, and certainly something that those teams can actually build on. Let's figure out how the other team needs to get worked after that, in my view. Well, I just want to go back to that, though. I think it'll be a great game. I think it'll be, there are certainly 2 good teams, 2 well-prepared teams. I think it'll be very, very close. But I think just Antrim, at the minute, have a little bit more cohesion about them. And they have beaten Kerry recently as well. And I think with Neil back, it just gives them. Now, if he was back in full flight and to his full ability, I think that would make it easier in terms of actually calling the winners.
Yeah, exactly. Right, so you're going for Antrim, Limerick, and Brian's going for Waterford. Amazingly. Right, we'll leave it there, Cheddar. I know you're under pressure with work as well. That's your last show, Cheddar. Best of luck with Laois. We'll hopefully get you back on the show after winning a few matches or whatever in the next couple of years. And like I said, the door's always open for you here on the show. So thanks very much. And we'll be back on Monday and we'll review the All-Ireland Finals. So we'll talk to everybody then. Good luck.
And when I started running, I suppose I didn't stop. And when I got the chance to go, I said I'd stay going. So it opened up.
We were only the small little fish out there, so we are, and we're trying hard to make it through. But it's hard to get the breaks when you're the smaller fish.
Because I love this county so much, you know. And it's just, I'm delighted that the lads did it for the people of Waterford today, because, like, I'm heartbroken. I let it go, 'cause I won't see you later, and we're not allowed to.